Tama Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. And I'm here with the low in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
We are back from our vacation.
We're very happy right now.
No, actually very sad. I have my post-vacation depression. I'm looking at the 600 pictures on my phone.
I know. People say they're homesick. I'm trip sick.
I'm vacation sick. We haven't been, this is our first podcast in almost 2 weeks because, well, it might actually be longer than, no, 2 weeks. We recorded our last podcast on the day we left and we said it was going to be a big mystery and you had to follow us on Instagram to find out where we went. And if you did, we went to Madrid and Lisbon for like 10 days. And
it was wonderful.
Oh my god, it was
the best thing ever. Let me tell you, I forgot how wonderful it is to travel.
Yeah, I had never been to Lisbon, and my god, I fell in love with that city.
Oh my god, you guys should have
fell in love with that city.
I mean, we love Madrid. It was my first time, and we had the most amazing time. I mean, Madrid is gorgeous.
Yes,
as some of you probably know, the architecture is gorgeous. The food, the people, is amazing. Everything about
the
it. Lisbon.
History, yeah.
But when you get to Lisbon, I mean, Lisbon is the oldest city in Western Europe. Mm-hmm. I believe it's the second. Athens is the first.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yes, but it's one of the oldest cities.
I didn't know we were giving lesson plans.
No, it's just that I didn't know that. I knew it was old, but I didn't know it was like the second oldest.
Right.
And you can tell. I mean, the minute you get there.
Talk about old world charm.
Yes, I mean,
there's just nothing like it. And
we had
my only regret is that we didn't spend a little bit more time in Lisbon. Don't get me wrong. I wouldn't have wanted to spend less time in Madrid. I'm just saying we should have been there.
I know. I should have thought about that. But anyway, it was well planned. We enjoyed every minute of it.
14-hour days. Like 14-hour days of as much just soaking it up as possible.
I have had
enough olives and codfish.
I know.
To last me for quite some time. And we drank gallons of sangria when we were in Madrid.
We had the most wonderful time. We also went to Sintra, which is about 40 minutes from Lisbon.
Lisbon. Oh, my God. Cannot recommend it enough.
I mean, Tom was just in love with Portugal in general. I wish we had had more time, as he said, to go to Porto, but we didn't. I mean, I didn't want to pack too much because then you just don't enjoy it because you're so busy running around, you know, from place to place. I didn't want that. I wanted us to enjoy and, you know, have the most wonderful time, and we did. Yeah. It was phenomenal. The hotels were amazing.
We made a new friend while we were there, which was really funny.
I know. We don't usually do this.
We would never do this.
Yes.
But when we went to Sintra and we were waiting for a train, and there was this young woman who was also, we were the only people on the train station, and she heard us talking to each other, and she realized that we were Americans, and she just said hi or whatever. I don't think there was any.
I think she
she asked, answered a question that we had about the schedule or something.
Or something about if that was the right train, you know, the usual
question. And that was, you know, it led to a little bit of small talk, and she was doing a trip, and she was doing like the whole youth hostel thing, and she was heading to Sintra like we were, and that was it. That was it.
Right.
And then,
in any other circumstance, we would have just said, "Hi, have fun,
have a
bye.
Great day." And we actually did do that.
Yes.
But we ran into her again, more than once. Well, she sat across from us on the train, but the train was so packed, we didn't really get to talk to her all that much. And then, we just were going to the same places and wound up together. And literally, we spent the entire day with this girl, Darby.
Yes. We love you, Darby.
I doubt she's listening, but if she is,
she was the sweetest woman. I mean, she was just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, we had lunch with her. We changed our plans so that we were all hitting the same places at the same time. We hired a tuk-tuk driver to take us out to the coast, the three of us.
And it was just amazing. We had the most amazing time.
I told her at the end of the day, I was like, listen, you need to understand, we are two cranky old men, and we would never do this with anyone unless they were cool and easy to be around.
But she was wonderful. She was so sweet. She was having the most wonderful time. She had been there for like 3 weeks.
Something like that. I don't want to give her life story.
Anyway, she was having she was traveling by herself and meeting people, and she loved that. That's how why she met us.
Yeah, it was just a funny little
thing. It was wonderful.
And then the minute we said goodbye to her in Lisbon, we turned around and ran smack into someone who said, "Oh my God, are you Tom and Lorenzo?"
I know, that's crazy.
So hello to Bill and Frank, who were also...
Oh, you remember
also,
their names. Well, awesome.
Bill and Frank were the characters on The Last of Us, and as soon as they said introduced themselves, I was like, oh, The Last of Us. Anyway... So hello to Bill and Frank, who might actually be listening.
Yes, they were also very sweet.
Very sweet. We were exhausted and looked a mess and sunburnt. So we probably weren't, I mean, I hope we were gracious, but we kept it quick and kept it moving. But it was great meeting you guys.
It was just insane. We were in Lisbon and someone said, and we're walking. And then we heard like someone say, Tom and Lorenzo. And I'm like, what?
And we should say the only reason he knew is because he had seen us on Instagram posting pictures.
I know,
pictures,
but even so, it's just, you know, it's of just
our,
crazy.
We rarely post pictures of our faces, but they
anyway, we did some post a couple pictures of us and, we had the most wonderful time, and let me tell you, I can't stop traveling anymore. I have to be traveling now.
I mean, we really put it on hold because of a lot of reasons.
Like, and the pandemic and everything.
Pandemic,
it's just a lot.
Parents getting sick and dying and books being written, and it was just, you know, this is what happens. Life gets in the way, the years go by, and you're like, holy shit, I need to go back to those things that I love.
But it's something that we need to do more often. I forgot how much I enjoyed.
Right.
You know, I did it a lot when I was much younger, and I just missed it.
I think we're doing a short trip in, well, I won't say where, but at Christmas time, I think
we're traveling
going.
All the time now.
We might actually let people know where we're going at Christmas.
I'm just
going
to let you know that I bought the tickets, and we're just going to be traveling all the time now.
Sounds good. Okay, so we have a podcast ahead of us, and we have much to discuss. The entire podcast this week is TV Talk themed. We have a bunch of shows to review or comment upon, and some... you know, news that came out this week. Two things. Before we get into the reviews, I wanted to talk about the fact that the Hollywood Reporter did a report on Amazon, and one of the big things that... Don't tell me to speed up.
Are you kidding me?
People have no idea. You tease this sweet little background dude.
It's just an asshole. Drag there.
Anyway. He's literally doing the speed it up motion, okay? Anyway... came out that The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power, the prequel series based on Tolkien's work, only had a 37% viewership completion rate in the States, and I think it was 45% international. Oh, wow. And that's bad. That's bad numbers. That means that only 37% of the audience finished the series after starting it.
That $1 billion project.
Well, and this is news because, yes, it is the most expensive series supposedly in television history, and there's a lot of reasons to question the creative impetus behind it, because it was basically Jeff Bezos, the owner of Amazon, telling his people, I want a Game of Thrones, I want you to find me a Game of Thrones. And you know, that isn't the best way to launch a creative prospect. I want you to copy something else and find, you know, make money off it. I will say I loved I know what the flaws in the show were. I can understand why people it didn't grab people as much as it could have, but I did love it. I saw the flaws, and I think it was way too slow out of the gate. I think it was trying to get too cutesy about some of the connections. I'm not sure that, as much as I thought it was interesting to look at the Harfoots, which were the Hobbit precursors, they don't really have anything to do with the story, and it just dragged it down. We'll see. I didn't really, we reviewed every episode, and I wasn't effusive in my praise, because I could see that it wasn't really clicking, but I liked it, and I'm sorry to see that. I think it's a little, disturbing that these shows are that so much money is being thrown at these shows without really locking down a reason for why people should watch them. You know, it tends to be, well, this is Tolkien, so it has an audience built in.
I think there was so much focus on the visual, and that's all mostly the money went, I guess, because it looked stunning.
I agree.
I mean, the sets were incredible. Everything looked amazing. But we even talked about it, and you mentioned it several times, that the dialogue or the script was sometimes a little... I don't know.
It wasn't quite there. And, it had an unfortunate timing comparison, which it welcomed with House of the Dragon. Mm-hmm. And to I think a lot of people's surprise, House of the Dragon came out of the gate pretty high quality.
Right.
And the acting and the scripts were just better than The Rings of
it
Power.
It was also smaller and more intimate, I think.
I can't complain about that. Tolkien is supposed to be large and sprawling. Right, so that's not a problem as far as I'm concerned. But I do think it has to be said that the cast is not on that level. There's a lot of weakness in the Rings of Power cast. Sorry to say, but it's true. And I wanted to return to the point that this was forced out of the gate because a billionaire wanted to make more money and wanted to copy another show. And that's the part of that really bothers me about it, is that there's no creativity. And nothing against the showrunners who have tried their best.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think the show still has potential. I don't think it's a failure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Amazon is going to cancel it. They've already invested the money. And I think it might not be 5 seasons, but they're definitely going to do 3 or 4 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was originally announced as 5. And it could.
Right.
So much of season 1 was set up, which was a huge mistake. When you're making a $1 billion TV show, your setup should be 30 minutes. I mean, the setup for The Lord of the Rings was 5 minutes of Cate Blanchett talking.
And that was it.
That was how you explained it. She explained 1,000 years of history in 5 minutes.
Which is one of the most beautiful things ever made, done.
Yeah, it is. It is. We could both quote it, but let's not do that. Anyway, again, going back to the point about intellectual property and the lack of creativity, this ties into another bit of news, which is that HBO Max is in talks with none other than J.K. Rowling to launch another Harry Potter series.
What?
This time it would be a television series with each season based on one of the Harry Potter books. And from what I've read, there's supposedly some new take. I don't know what the new take would be. I mean,
oh my God.
Look. A lot of this, when this came out just this week, it was met with a lot of, who asked for this? Who asked for this? And look, I don't like J.K. Rowling, and I wish people would move the fuck away from the Harry Potter verse, but it's clearly still got legs. Like, that, there's still clearly a fan base. Having said that, a report came out that, like, J.K. Rowling's earnings have dropped, like, 70% or something in the last... But honestly, I question reports like that.
Oh, so she went from millions to Z millions now.
Yeah, I mean she probably has lost.
Oh, Z from Y. I mean, yeah.
The Fantastic Beasts movies did very badly. Successively worse with each one, and the third one did terribly.
Uh-huh.
So there is no doubt that her brand is fucked. And I don't think it's a given that a Harry Potter series would flop, but. Yeah, I wouldn't write it off. I just wouldn't completely write it off the people who are rolling their eyes at it. So what I'm saying is, if you don't want this to happen, and you should not want this to happen, because that woman doesn't deserve any more money.
Well, putting that woman aside.
So you need to protest loudly, because right now it's in the talking stages at Warner Brothers.
Right.
Go ahead.
Putting that horrible person aside, I was never a fan of any of, I never read the books.
You're too old for it. It was a millennial thing.
Well, even back, no, I mean.
Well, I mean, I know, a lot of millennials.
What are you talking about? No, when the books came out.
That's true. I was
young and I could have read them.
You weren't that young.
Anyway, yes, I was.
No, you weren't.
Okay. So I never read the books, but was never interested. I've seen all the movies. I think I saw a couple. Anyway. Wasn't that interested. But if you read the books and you love every character, blah, 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 I guess. But I just, why bring it back? I mean, I don't understand those
things. I mean, we could say that, but why bring another Batman movie back? Like,
True. Yeah.
Why bring James Bond back?
Anyway, but it's just unfortunate because it's more money to her and to her cause. And, you know, and things are just so bad right now when it comes to transgender, you know, anything.
Yeah, she's a huge... TERF. She's a transphobe. She has used her position
and money
to relentlessly attack trans people. It's not even a little like side thing. It's her whole thing now.
Yeah, and you can say, why are we singling her out or whatever?
Well she's
a zillionaire.
Yeah, you single out the powerful first.
Yeah, she has more money than God, and she's using that money to, you know, donating money to all these anti, you know, trans associations and groups and so on. It's just a horrible person with a lot of money, which is never good.
So in sum, Rings of Power, still hoping it's going to pull itself right together. I'm watching it. There's no, I like I said, I enjoyed the first season. Didn't think it was perfect, but I enjoyed it. Harry Potter 2.0, let's not go there, people. Let's yell at Warner Brothers a lot and tell them not to do this. Right. Incidentally, I think Warner, I may have mentioned this before, Warner's in the last year has made a lot of moves to cancel things and move things off its schedule. And it is, there's a large number of projects that were fronted by people of color or queer people that just got removed from the schedule. Right. So the fact that they're courting a known turf like this, I don't know. I get a really bad vibe off of Warner Brothers lately. Just a really, really bad vibe. Anyway, that's my take on that. Now, what TV show do you want to talk about first? I think we should talk. Do you want to talk about Beef?
Yeah, we can. I mean, I watched Beef a long time ago, the screeners. And
let me just set it up because you are going to do most of the talking. Mm-hmm. Beef just dropped today on Netflix, starring Steven Yeun and Ali Wong. And it's a dramatic sort of snapshot of modern anxiety and modern tension and modern
and rage.
I think we're all walking around with a lot of anxiety and rage right now. And for various reasons. And this show centers two people with very interesting stories, very interesting characters, and actually two great actors. I knew Steven could act, but Ali is fantastic.
She is hysterically amazing.
She is such a tightly wound spring. I want to say I haven't watched much of it. That's why I'm tossing to Lorenzo, because he watched the whole season in screeners. So
right. I watched the whole season a long time. Has it premiered yet?
No. Today. It dropped today.
Okay. So I watched it a long time ago, and I just fell in love with the show. First of all, I was surprised and happy to see that, you know, 99% of the cast is Asian.
Right.
Which is great. You don't see that much.
You're seeing it more, but it's, a rising trend.
It's still great to see. And playing normal people doing normal things, not some, you know, typical Asian character.
I think normal would be a bad choice of word.
Not normal, yes. Let's say just standard, you know, daily life type of situation. Sorry about the modern or normal expression. Anyway, just doing daily thing, just having, you know, a regular life like everybody else. And it's great because it deals also with stress and anxiety and rage. That the whole story starts with, you know, they, I guess I can say that. They have it's a road rage type of show. It happens that
there's an incident between the two characters.
The two characters.
Who are strangers.
Yes. And that, you know, pretty much dictates everything that happens throughout the entire season.
It escalates.
Yeah, it escalates. And it pretty much tells, you know, it's the starting point of the whole thing. And it's just a great show. I thought it was great. It felt fresh. The dialogue, the situations, and it's nice because it deals a lot with them being Asian and dealing with being Asian and with their parents and the Asian
identity.
Culture identity and all that, which is great. But it's not just focused on that. It's also focused on their lives and things they gave up or things that they had to do, and their lives, their careers. I thought it was great. It was a great show. It felt very modern. The dialogue and the situations and they have amazing chemistry together. They're great. Yeah. They're absolutely great together. The guy who plays his brother, Young Mazzino, is also very good. Everyone is great. I love the show, and it gets a little repetitive towards the middle. But then,
like all Netflix shows.
Like, exactly. But if you just hang in there, keep watching it, and then the last episode, to me, it was absolutely phenomenal. I'm not going to give it away in anything away because it was so unexpected, and I just loved every minute of it. Just brilliant dialogue. It's pretty much just the two of them, the entire episode, and it's just great, great, great. The back and forth and what they say, you know, what they talk about. It's just amazing. I really recommend the show. It felt fresh to me. It felt contemporary. And it's an all Asian cast. You know, I'm all about that.
So highly Lorenzo recommended.
Oh yeah. Oh, and Ashley Park is in it.
Yes.
And she's also amazing.
Yes. So now I'm going to take over the mic for a second because you have nothing to say about The Mandalorian, which I haven't spoken about at all this season. It's on its third season. And the reason I haven't spoken about it or written about it, or except for briefly this week, I haven't tweeted about it, pardon me, is because it kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. It kind of sucks. All the charm has gone out of the show. I've really lost a lot of interest in the Star Wars universe over the last year because it has just flooded the zone with so many mediocre. I think my breaking point was the Obi-Wan Kenobi show because I was like, if you can't get this right, like, mm-hmm. and they couldn't, it was boring as hell. If you can't get an Obi-Wan Kenobi limited, you know, like a 6-episode series right, what the hell are you doing? Like, and then they did the Boba Fett show, which nobody asked for, and it sucked, and they resolved the cliffhanger from season 2 of The Mandalorian in the Boba Fett show, so season 3 of The Mandalorian picks up, and you know, if you didn't watch the Boba Fett show, you don't understand.
What? That's weird.
It was all of these weird, I think they're trying to do this interconnected Marvel universe kind of thing.
Like everything else,
and it's
everybody.
It's not working, it's not working. I also think, like this week's episode, it had Jack Black and Lizzo in it, and Christopher Lloyd and
Lizzo. Wow.
Yeah. And first off, I love Lizzo, but she can't act. She's not there yet. I know that she probably, I can guarantee she's moving into an acting career at some
really?
Point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can guarantee that. She's got a big personality.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I can definitely see it, but she's not there yet. And oh my God, this, I know some people like this episode, but I actually couldn't finish it. And I went and read a recap to see how it ended because I couldn't take any more of it. After there was like 10 minutes to go. And I was like, no, I'm sorry, I'm out. I think a huge problem is that they have lost focus from the main character, which is Din Djarin, which is Pedro Pascal's character.
Yeah, you said that, like, he's the main character and he's barely there.
He's in it, but he's not really driving the story anymore. And even Grogu, Baby Yoda, is just this prop that gets passed around that doesn't really have an arc anymore. Or, you know, like, there was a point to Baby Yoda's story where he was trying to find a home for this Jedi, you know, blah, 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 this Force sensitive. And that's just all been let go.
Really?
None of that's in there anymore. And now it's about, you know, the Mandalorian culture and bring it in together. And that's fine, I guess. But, you know, the first two seasons were Din Djarin in his Mandalorian armor and being super cool and everything. And now it's him in a group of literally 100 other people wearing similar armor. So, I mean, okay. So,
oh, right. Yeah, he was like different.
Now he's
like,
not. He's just one of them.
I see.
And they've also really gone in hard on the never removing the helmet thing, which is, of course, built into the character's lore and background, but they kind of found ways once a season or so to have him remove his helmet so that Pedro Pascal could actually be on screen. And the thing is, the harder they lean into that whole thing, the more it's like, it's very hard for me as a viewer to really get behind, because it's cultish, it's weird cultish behavior, it's disgusting and unhygienic. There's just not a lot of reason for me as a viewer to be like, yes, I want to learn more about these people who probably smell really bad. Like,
they all look the same.
Right. And I don't know. It's not working for me. I don't think, I think leaning so hard into the Mandalorian, you know, cult aspects is you've lost the originality with the character. You're relying on a lore that is, it's just not great. I mean, at least like Jedi were always flawed from the get-go. There's a lot of reasons you can say we shouldn't bring the Jedi back, but at least they were cool. At least they looked cool doing what they did. But the Mandalorians, admittedly, they do look cool. I've said all along, he's basically the Star Wars version of Batman. But that whole mythos, that whole thing about never removing your helmet, and it's not working for me. Also, there is a focus on Bo-Katan, who is being played by Katie Sackhoff. Gotta say, the problem isn't her. If anything, the problem is that she's so good that she's removing even more focus from him.
Right.
There's an interesting story there about her and about her quest and about what she's being charged with doing, but I hate to say it, but like, go give her a series if that's what you want. Because this, whatever I liked about The Mandalorian's first two seasons, mm-hmm. it's just not happening for me anymore. That's a shame.
That's a shame because even I watched the first season and loved it.
Yeah. It's dull. It feels, I can tell there's a direction, but I'm not invested in it. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. It's not entirely directionless. It's just that I'm not interested in the direction it's going in. I tend to think the Star Wars universe is starting to get overstuffed and overdeveloped. I don't know that I will watch the Ahsoka series that's coming out with Rosario Dawson. I never got into the cartoons and all that stuff, and they're leaning heavily on that lore right now. That's fine. I'm not mad at it, mm-hmm. but it's not for me. It's not really interesting me all that much. Right. They just announced today, this morning, that Daisy Ridley is coming back as Rey Skywalker in a new movie. And I'm like, yeah, I really liked her. Really liked her in the part and everything. And I would not have been opposed to seeing that character again, but not this quickly. And not that supposedly she's going to reestablish the Jedi Order. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. That's really not grabbing me in any way, shape, or form. They should have given John Boyega a movie. I would have liked to have seen that character come back. Anyway, those are my Star Warsy thoughts. Still loving Star Trek Picard.
You still like that, right?
Living for that shit. I will be doing a write up on that when the season wraps up in 2 weeks. Actually, it's not flawless, but it's so good. It's just the best Star Wars.
It's a great cast, right?
I won't say it's the best Star Wars because I got to say I just recently watched rewatched Strange New World season one, and that is the best season of Star Wars in decades. I gotta say decades. Anyway, moving away from all that nerdy crap, we can either do Yellow Jackets next, or we can do Schmigadoon next, or we can do your obscure Spanish TV show that I know nothing
obscure.
About. Oh no, I'm being mean.
Please. Anyway, I got back and couldn't stop thinking about
the trip. Back from Spain, yeah.
Yeah, got back from Spain and Portugal and couldn't stop thinking about the trip. And what I usually do is I look for shows so that I can see the city again.
Yeah, yeah. It's so cute, actually.
It is cute. So I was like looking for shows in Madrid and Spain so I could, you know, see the Gran Vía again and all the main avenues and you know, boroughs and all that. So, and then I was watching all this show and then Netflix suggested one that I hadn't seen before called The Girls at the Back, which is a weird name for a show. But anyway, it's called Las de la Última Fila, meaning the one, you know, the ones from the back. Anyway, it's a miniseries about five friends and they travel every year together. They've been friends in school. And so this time they're traveling and they find out that one of them has cancer. They don't say who until the end of the show. And then they come up with the idea of having, they'll have like a bucket list of everyone has to write on a piece of paper without the others knowing who, what they want to do, something they haven't done before, that it's sort of like daring and they have to do it together. So at first I was like, I don't know if I want to watch this, kind of a little depressing or whatever, and it's not my thing, but you guys know me, I always give it 15 minutes. So it started and I just fell in love with the show. They're so amazing. The actors are amazing. They're so friendly and, you know, so happy and linked as friends together. And they're just great. It's a great show. It's funny. They have funny situations. They have fun. And they actually shot the whole thing in Cádiz, which is this beautiful place in the south of Spain, which has beautiful beaches and gorgeous architecture. So it's beautiful to look at, and the actors are really good, and it's actually very interesting. I like it. It seems like the basic story, you know, friends and one has cancer and they all travel together, but they managed to do it in a way that it was a little different and a little unique in a way how they presented the situations, how they had to confront certain things. So I really enjoyed it. I watched the whole thing in one night. I mean, it was just very fast. I was like, oh, it's done. So I highly recommend it. It's called The Girls at the Back on Netflix. So, you know, give it a try. Just, I loved it. Good. I thought it was a great show.
Absolutely. And now we're going to get really cranky about the next two shows, which are beloved and coming back for their second seasons. And Gotta say that neither season has set us on fire. Let's start with Schmigadoon. How about that?
Yes.
Okay, so we absolutely adored Schmigadoon.
One of the best things ever.
Honestly, it was one of our favorite shows.
Yes.
I don't know, did it come out in 2022 or 2021? But it was the best, one of the best shows of that whatever year it debuted. And at the first season was a pastiche of a bunch of classic musicals, yeah, mostly from the 40s and the 50s, largely from the Rodgers and Hammerstein sort of school, right, of musicals. The cast was stacked to the rafters with a bunch of Broadway veterans of musical theater, and it was just hilariously funny. I'm reading a lot of people since the second season debuted who are like, yeah, I tried to watch it, but it's not for me. So I understand if it's not a... if you don't get the references, if you don't think musical theater is worthy of your attention or whatever, I get it. It's not for everyone. So you really have to sort of love musical theater to love Schmigadoon. The good thing about season one is that they were doing such classic takes on things like, you know, Carousel and Oklahoma and The Sound of Music, stuff that every high school in America has done a version of these musicals.
They know,
so they're incredibly familiar. And they're easy to to parody and pastiche. And it was broad in a way that was very easy to grasp. Second season, now listen, I think this is a brilliant ploy, but so far I don't think it's working out for them, is that they have advanced to musicals from the 60s and the 70s. And they are making, and we're talking like Cabaret and Chicago, and there's there's actually quite a bit of Hair in there. There's actually a little bit of Annie. There's some Jesus Christ Superstar. There's
the one with Shirley Temple. What's it called?
Company and the Fantastics and Pippin, all of that.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Shirley MacLaine.
No, Shirley Sweet Charity.
Sweet Charity, thank you.
So there's little bits of all of that in it. There's a lot of Fosse in the first two episodes. And they're making the point that they're sort of giving a little history on a lesson on the history of American musical theater, because they make the point right from the get-go that things took a much darker turn during this period of American musical theater, and the stories, it was less about plot and it was more about vibes, and it was a lot darker. There was more sex, there was more murder, and all this is true. I think they're having a difficult time parodying this material.
Right.
First off, parodying anything Fosse has been so done. I'm pretty sure they've done it on margarine commercials at this point.
Right.
It's really hard to find something fresh. And Dove Cameron did a take on Mine Hair.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, she's great. She gave it everything she had, but it never... Failure to launch. The song, it was called Kaput, and I was like, yeah, this isn't doing it for me. And not because it didn't sound like Liza or anything. The song just...
Right.
This has been done.
And I think there's a major difference between parodying things that are considered perfect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
That's a very good
point.
The
music was from the 40s and 50s. They're perfect.
Yeah,
like, they're perfect in any
fantasy
way.
Fantasy world.
Yeah, they have a wonderful ending. Everything is beautiful about them. So it's fun to make fun of those.
I agree.
And mock those. But when you get to a period where it was more about being real and presenting life.
Sweeney Todd is another one.
Yes, exactly. Like, or just like, you know, gruesome, or just very real people with real issues going through shit and war. There was the war. There was a lot going on. So it's different to make fun of that. Because in a way, these people, when they made these musicals, they were sort of like criticizing
were criticizing musicals.
Yes,
it was a critique of standards in musical, and that was the brilliance of...
And they acknowledge that in the beginning. They say, oh, you know, when they stumble again... into the whole, you know,
into Schmigadoon.
Into Schmigadoon. I'm like, oh, that's it? No, I want the old, you know, I want the funny, cute, whatever.
Well, that's exactly, that's a good point, is that the characters themselves,
they
played
acknowledge
by Keegan,
that,
Michael Key, and Cecily Strong, they start off being like, yeah, I don't want to be here. This is, and I'm afraid that as a viewer, I didn't quite get over that. Listen, I love these musicals. I love Chicago, Cabaret, and all the stuff.
They're
Jesus Christ Superstar, all of them. And I think there's value in it. I think it's a bold choice. I think it's a creative choice to take this concept to its next step. I've only seen the first two episodes. It's just not charming me the way it did last season. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem for me, I think, is as much as I like Keegan-Michael Key and Cecily Strong, I think we would have been better off with two new people visiting Schmigadoon instead of taking characters from last season and having them revisit. Because we're dealing with their disappointment and disorientation the whole time. There are the characters that we're supposed to relate to, and they are disappointed that they're here and sort of confused about. And I'm like, yeah, this is not getting across.
Right, right. I was actually fine with the numbers, but when he got to the whole thing about like
the murder
mystery or whatever thing, I was like, all right, that's just, they lost me here, because it's just very plain and just boring. I'm not interested.
It's not making me laugh.
No, it's not.
The only thing that really made me laugh, and she's
hysterical,
Jane Krakowski, like, Jesus Christ.
Oh, God.
And I turned to her, I was like, she really knows what to do with this material, because she has a musical theater background, but she also is a brilliant comedian.
Right, right.
And has done a lot of comic television work. So she is really, her and Cecily Strong, I think, are the two MVPs. They are both a joy to watch in all of their scenes. Everyone else, it's just, it's not clicking. I think Dove Cameron is great, but I don't know that she's the best choice for a Sally Bowles.
No, I felt that she was trying too hard.
She was trying too hard.
And also, I was disappointed with Ariana DeBose, who is amazing.
Yeah, she's cast her as the MC in Cabaret. Well, a take on the MC. And that's fun, fun to do.
I just didn't think it worked at all.
I didn't think it worked. And the weird thing about her character was that, unlike most of the rest of them, she was like repeating almost word for word some of the lines from the MC. And I was like, well,
it just didn't work.
Yeah.
It just didn't work. The way she performed. Laugh. Yeah.
I did think Cecily Strong's audition scene was really funny. And like I said, Jane Krakowski's number is really funny.
I still think it's funny the way they make fun of the whole genre. Yeah.
Titus Burgess is not working for me at all.
No, I mean, it's a little too precious. It feels like they're trying too hard in a way. It wasn't as fun, as natural as the first season.
Here's my thing. If they had just introduced two new characters who wander into Chicago and did largely the same story, I think it would have benefited from it a lot, because, and maybe this is just me, but they're using all the same actors from last season, except they're cast, the musical theater actors, they're all cast in new roles. And Cecily Strong and Keegan-Michael Key keep commenting on it, and they commented on who they played the previous season. So that just leaves you, I can't help but be like, okay, so what are they? Like, are they ghosts? What is happening here? Are they, and you're starting to set up something that needs to be explained. Or the lack of the explanation is starting to hang over the whole thing. And if you had just done another season with new characters and not tried to have them comment on all that.
It distracts you a little.
Instead of
focusing on what's going on, you're still thinking about the previous season.
They keep telling you who this person played the previous season, and they're actually naming the character. And I'm like, that's not working for me. None of this. Love the cast. I do think Keegan-Michael Key is not great. He keeps one of the things, and it's actually got annoying in the second episode when he was in the jail cell with Aaron Tveit, who was actually really funny. He keeps reacting to everything like he doesn't know what's going on. And he's never seen any, like, where's this music coming from? Why are you acting this way? You came back to Schmigadoon because you know how it works.
Yeah.
That's what makes Cecily Strong's performance, because everything she does is very knowing. She knows exactly how it works in this world. So she's not overreacting. I just don't like his take on the character. I feel like I'm being mean because this is such a beloved show, but and it's only two episodes in. It could absolutely turn things around. But it really didn't grab me in the first two episodes. I actually found them a little difficult to sit through.
There is a difference between, like, oh my God, the second season, I can't stop watching it. Then, okay, I love this show so much, I have to give it a try. I have to stay here and watch this.
Because, that's sort of how I feel.
That's how I felt. Like, I had an obligation to watch it, which I don't like when I feel that way.
Yeah, which is, and like, they could turn it around, but it's a huge disappointment that I'm feeling that way about Schmigadoon right out of the gate. We'll see. It could be that the material is inherently difficult to parody in the same way as sort of the Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff. Or it could be that material has already been over-parodied so much that they're not finding anything fresh. But something about it, or the whole entire thing about it, just isn't working for me. Sorry. And now we have to move on to the second point that's going to piss everyone off, because everyone loves Yellow Jackets. And I don't have a lot of criticism of Yellow Jackets yet, but I will say that the first, the third episode dropped this morning, but I haven't watched it. And this is part of the reason why we haven't done recaps. It kind of sucks. I hate when they do this. First off, the first episode dropped while we were in Europe, and I just, there was no way. I couldn't even get to a screener. And I didn't have the time. It takes hours to write a recap. And
yeah, people love y'all,
but I was on a much needed vacation. And then I thought I would get caught up when we got back. But they Showtime is doing this thing where the episode airs on Showtime on Sunday night, but they're dropping it on their streaming service at like first thing Friday morning. When do you put the recap out?
Right.
You know, and at this, and I'm already behind that. So much like Star Trek Picard, I'll probably do an end of the season recap when Yellow Jackets is all done. But enjoyed the first two episodes, but I'm not on fire like I was last season. Do you agree? Disagree?
I love the first season for
its boldness. It was so bold.
Reasons, mainly Melanie Linsky, because I absolutely love her, and Juliette Lewis and Christina Ricci.
Yeah.
I'm going to name all of them. They're all great, and I love their characters. And this time, I'm still adjusting to the whole thing, because it's very much focused on their time there when they're young, and I don't think the actors are that great.
See, we disagree on this, but go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't know. I was more interested in their lives as adults, but it is not. It's a little boring now, because it feels like they told everything they need to be told in the first season about the adults, and then they're just sort of like, you know, killing time now and spending more time with the young guys. I enjoy it, but we did get to, I don't know. It feels a little. I mentioned it to you that It feels to me, and I never say this, but it feels to me that it geared towards a very much younger audience this season, especially with the young people and you know, the actors and the characters. I don't know. It feels that way. The whole thing, I mean, we all knew they were going to end up eating somebody at some point. I'm not giving anything away. And when it finally got to that, it felt very performative to me. It felt very vampire, you know, like this vampire movie. It's just very showy. I didn't like it at all. I was turned off by it, actually. It felt very TikTok to me. Like, okay, we're going to put up a show here. Instead of, like, do it in a more organic way. I just didn't like the whole thing. So, but I'll keep watching. I'll keep watching. I'll keep watching it.
Okay. I don't disagree with most of that, but I do have a different take on what part works for me. I think the stuff with the younger versions of the characters is more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that's happening with their middle-aged selves in the present day, I believe it was the review in Variety. I don't know which one made the comparison, but a lot of it's getting very Desperate Housewife-y, especially the whole murder thing with Shauna and her husband covering up the murder and their teenage daughter trying not to, you know, to discover the murder. And I don't love that storyline. I know that it's a continuation of last season's storyline, and I actually didn't mind it last season, but I didn't realize they were going to spend, like, this is going to hang over the characters for a really long time, which, of course, it's a murder. It probably should. I love Christina Ricci's character, and I love Juliette Lewis's character, and I actually think their adult stories are more interesting than what I love Melanie Linsky, but I'm not loving this this storyline. I'm really not. This sort of covering up my lover, the murder of my lover, and trying to keep my teenage daughter from finding out. It's very, yeah, it doesn't have quite the edge that the show seemed to have last year. I think Tawny Cypress has Thaisa. I think that's Ty. I know they call her Ty. I think it's Thaisa. I actually do like her storyline as well. It's getting incredibly dark.
Right, yes.
But the thing is, I hope they pull this off, because I suspect the viewership isn't ready for that Walter White Breaking Bad moment where they realize that the people that they're kind of rooting for are really awful people. Melanie Linsky's character is objectively a terrible person. She's murderous. She lies. She's, you know, it's just that she's Melanie Linsky. And it's the same thing with Ty, where, you know, she's fabulous. She's glamorous. She's, you know, she's an LGBTQ senator, blah, blah, blah. But she's objectively a horrible. She beheaded the dog, for fuck's sake. And they're you know, dancing around, you know, trauma and mental health, and all of that is true. Obviously, these women are all suffering from tremendous trauma, but some of them are really bad people. And I think the show is, if they pull it off, that will be great. They will have to have this moment where the viewership understands that you can love Melanie Lynskey, but understand what
she, right.
She's not good. It's an interesting balancing act that they're doing, because I do think they turned a corner with the cannibalism scene where, first off, it was always hinted at, but never entirely spelled out. So there was a deniability fact, like maybe they didn't eat someone. But they went all in on that scene. And I get what you're saying. I didn't love the whole fantasy aspect of it.
Horrible.
But I do think that these are traumatized teenage girls who have a sense of the dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
And that is how some of them would justify it to themselves. And I think that that scene is, of course, meant to be disturbing because they are eating a person on camera. But it was weird. I think the whole way they got to the point where, you know, they tried to cremate Jackie, but then nature turned it into an oven and accidentally cooked her, and then they couldn't resist. That was a little bit much for me. Like, that was just a little... I actually was more shocked in the previous episode where Shauna popped Jackie's ear into her mouth and ate it. Like, that was more...
See, that's what I mean.
That had more edge to it.
Yeah, that feels more natural
and
in a way.
And in a way, it was more disturbing than this thing where they're all dressed up like goddesses at a banquet table.
I hated it.
I do want to say, we are middle-aged men, and that was the perspective of teenage girls.
You can only get to say that once or twice per episode.
People have seen the pictures, sweetie. anyway... but yeah, this is a teenage girl perspective, and I'm not going to criticize that. It wasn't for me, but I do understand it. And I do think the show was doing a really, really good job of unpacking two things. Female teenage aggression and rage and how it plays out socially. Right. And because these aren't stories that we tell, teenage girls can really fuck each other up when they set their hearts to it. And if you put them in a situation like that, it's really interesting to explore, because a lot of that, I don't think it's a coincidence that the first girl that they ate was the most popular girl.
Right.
Because in that sort of social milieu, that those figures are both loved and hated within equal measure. Everyone wants to be them. Everyone wants to kill them. And I think that's very much unpacking, like, teenage girls, social norms and everything. Of course, taken to an extreme.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that all barriers, social barriers, have been broken down. There's no adults to stop them from doing this sort of stuff. And they are, of course, starving and possibly hallucinating about weird things in the woods. I am still enjoying the girls in the woods. I'm still intrigued. There's a lot of mystery there about what the hell is going on. You still don't know if there is there something supernatural going on, or are these girls just all completely delusional and starving? And I do think that's interesting to unpack, which is why the covering up my lover's murder story, it just doesn't interest me.
Right.
It just doesn't.
We'll see. I hope that having this out of the way done, the whole eating her thing, maybe we'll see. Maybe.
Oh, there are more people to be eaten.
Oh, dear.
The gay coach apparently never came home. And of course, where's Shauna's baby?
Oh, dear God.
Where's Shauna's baby?
Okay.
We should also note that Simone Kessel came in as, I can't remember what the character's name is. She came in as the adult version of her. Now I have to look her up. You talk.
I don't have anything to say.
Okay. She came in, I can't remember the character's name, but she came in as, the antler girl, the one who's that's the other thing, is that they started introducing more of the background girls, the teen, because they only focused on a few last season, and more of them are showing up in the scenes. I'm assuming because they're going to eventually be eaten or killed or whatever, or maybe we're going to be introduced to adult versions of them. I still think the hook is great. I'm definitely watching for the rest of the season. I'm not disappointed in the way I was with Schmigadoon. Mm-hmm. I still think it's there. There's still a lot of joy in watching Melanie Lynskey, Christina Ricci, all of these, you know, Juliette Lewis, all of them.
They're
like I said,
great.
Simone Kessel's really, really good. And I think the teen girls, you were saying how about Ella Purnell is just...
She is amazing.
Well, she's gone now. But
I know. It's a shame because she is
really, really, really good. And I think almost all the teen... they're, none of the actresses are teenagers, but they're playing teenagers. All the teen girls are good. I just... Yeah, I want to see where... I feel like... We said this last season when we talked about the show on the podcast, and the creators came out and said they had a 5-season plan, and we were both
really?
Like,
"Wow,
you don't remember this?" We were both like, "Oh, okay," because a 5-season plan implies like this extended mythology, lost puzzle box show.
Oh, for, God,
and
yeah.
I don't know that I want that. I wanted teen trauma and middle aged PTSD.
5 seasons, that's a lot.
Yeah, we'll see. There's still a lot to unpack. They've already gotten to the eating people on camera stuff. So what else is there after this? But we'll see. Like I said, the one thing I'm holding out for is that they have this, they pull off this moment where the audience realizes these are not redeemable characters. Right, right. These are all pretty right. bad people. Right. Trauma or no, they're bad people. We'll see. Because that, to me, would be the interesting way to take it.
It's still interesting. I'll watch it, but...
It's yeah. great cast. It's it is, such a great
general,
cast.
Yeah, they're great.
And the and music.
The music is amazing.
Oh,
love
so
the
good.
Soundtrack. Yeah, it's just great, great. Everything. It's well done.
It's well done. So I just... It hasn't... Lottie. Simone Kessel plays Lottie. She's the antler girl. I just saw it on IMDb.
There you go.
I was scrolling and talking at the same time because I can multitask. Anyway.
Oh, good for you.
I know. So that's our thoughts. We'll return to almost all of these shows at some point, either on the podcast right. or on our site before they wrap up their seasons or when they wrap up their seasons. So until then, and until we come back next week, we'd love to hear what you all think about all of these shows that we've talked about. And we want you all to take care of yourselves and love you. Mean it. Bye-bye.
Bye.